Welcome to Ask the CIO, sponsored by Oracle and DLT Solutions on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Now, here's your host, Jason Miller.
My guest is Keith Bluestein, the Acting Small Business Administration Chief Information Officer. Keith, welcome to the program.
Glad to be here.
So it's been about 3 years since I had the SBA CIO on my show, so I want to start with some older priorities, catch up on how much progress you guys have made. At the time, about 3 years ago, one of the big priorities was a new customer relationship management tool, a CRM tool. Just tell us the latest. What's the status of that effort? Is it in process? Is it giving you guys some benefit?
Microsoft CRM was indeed deployed, but it wasn't deployed too widely. I think when you actually had spoken to Chase Garwood previously about 3 years ago, I think shortly after he had the discussion with you, he departed. So with the CRM specifically, there were programs that used it extensively, but it didn't catch on as he had originally hoped, I believe. I think it fell victim to changing priorities or the fact that it had a great deal of customization in order to fit the various user groups or programs that wanted to use it. So obviously that translates to dollars, and there's always too many priorities for too few dollars. So CRM as a tool has got a lot of potential. In fact, we have a pilot going on right now with Salesforce.com in one of our areas in a variety of digital projects in the pipeline. They're probably a little bit too nascent to talk about, but you know that is a potential that we still want to exploit.
In the meantime, I mean, with, as you said, some parts of SBA maybe using the Microsoft CRM, others are looking at this pilot. Is there a CRM tool anyways that may be a legacy one, if you will?
They are still using. So they did customize CRM for several of the different programs. As we've gone through, and we're in a process of modernizing a lot of stuff that is here at SBA, and we found that there are a lot of different initiatives. For instance, with the CRM product, we actually had two different versions of the CRM product, both of which were customized. And as we started taking a look at that, especially since we've been driving to try to go to the Microsoft cloud, it's like, well, it really behooves us to standardize on one platform and be able to move that. So they have had benefit, and certainly the areas that use that, specifically some of our admin functions, some of our HR process functions, we're very, very satisfied with that tool, but it's kind of a legacy tool, and again, to have the skill set around to customize it has been kind of a challenge given resource constraints.
And I know anytime you customize any commercial off-the-shelf software, you're just asking for challenges. So I imagine, as you said, it behooves just one to have one, and then two, not to have it so customized. And it sounds like you give us a little bit of a preview of maybe a future priority, driving to the cloud, so we will come back around to that in a little bit.
Okay.
Part of the CRM tool, of course, is the push for better data analytics. Is that something that your office is supporting as well? I mean, obviously, the CRM tool is not throughout all of SBA, but those who are using it, are you putting tools on top of the CRM to take advantage of the data analytics?
So what's interesting is I would say that we're not using it or leveraging it to any great extent for data analytics in that particular area. But I will say that, you know, we have some very robust IT operations in certain areas, like the Office of the Chief Financial Officer, our Office of Disaster Assistance, and certainly our Office of Capital Access. They run some pretty extensive data analytics, but they're kind of customized tools that are running in their environment. So we didn't necessarily leverage the data analytics portion of CRM. Now, that said, assuming that you go to some of these environments, that's one of the advantages, obviously, that Microsoft pitches. Is if you have your data out there, they can sit there and basically provide other analytic tools are out there to provide you that data. But from just our basic IT operation standpoint at this time, we're not really doing anything across the agency to collect data and analyze it. That's something that we're looking at in the future.
Generally speaking, do you support, for instance, the IT ops and the CFO or disaster resistance from a data analytics perspective, or do they kind of do it internally because, as you said, it's a customized tool?
In those areas, they do it internally. In fact, specifically, the CFO has got a pretty good operation in there, and that we were one of the pilot agencies because we actually have a pretty good grip on our data and we can analyze that. They were one of the pilot groups for the Data Act, where we're one of the Data Act agencies that's routinely providing that data into the federal government dashboard.
Now, how much did I want to go down that path? Because I saw a presentation recently, that a panel that you were on with, I think it was your CFO, and you guys were talking about both FITARA, the Federal IT Acquisition Reform Act, which we'll probably get to later in the conversation, but also the Data Act. Can you talk a little bit about your role as CIO in helping implement the Data Act?
When I actually came here, I've only been here for just a little over a year. So when I got here, they were already down the path of implementing a lot of that. So at this point, it's been a function I've been focusing more on the infrastructure piece here, and I've been peripherally involved just in the Data Act with respect to, I understand what she's reporting. A lot of that stuff is actually reported through our organization as part of our integrated reporting that we have to do to OMB. But as far as day-to-day management of that, we're not involved at this point, although I will say that that's something that ultimately we want to get to. There's a number of different things that are going on in government that ultimately we want to get that core data down to some level of control and have governance over it so we can do some more innovative things with the applications that would actually access that data.
Let's jump over to cybersecurity. That was another major effort back in 2013. It's still a major effort now. Obviously, every agency is post-cyber sprint. Talk a little bit about how SBA has taken advantage of last year's cyber sprint to improve the security of its networks, and then we can jump into maybe some more specifics like the CDM program.
Wow, that's nothing like a narrow question. So this is an area, specifically in SBA, that we've got a lot of information and certainly a lot of initiatives in that area. So I arrived here just as the cyber sprint started last year, and I think, as I kind of alluded to previously, some initiatives that started under previous leadership were not necessarily completed due to leadership turnover. So when Chase Garwood was here, I think in the last conversation you had with him, he was talking about focusing on 802.1x, not to get too technical, but yeah, that's just kind of an underlying framework that you put in there in order to enable some of these security initiatives that was put in place, but it was never fully implemented. So fortunately, when he had laid that foundation, when we got here and OMB put the directive out, you know, thou shalt implement all these things and as quickly as possible. Fortunately, we had that building block already in place, and we were able to implement that. So over the last year, we've gotten to the point where we're nearly 100% complete in providing everybody personal identification verification or PIV access. So we have a lot of issues still with some legacy equipment that make it challenging to comply with all the cyber sprint initiatives, but we have done an awful lot of good work on there. And one of the things, I'll do a shout out for OMB and DHS, because they've been really good partners in all this. Obviously, they know where big government wants to go, and they've been very good about setting those goals and the interfaces very, very clearly so that it's much easier to plug into that system, if you will. So that goes to CDM, which I think you mentioned in there. So that the agency signed up for CDM participation back in 2013, and one of the things with the leadership turnover is that wasn't necessarily passed down to too many people, apparently, and in the intervening period. So now we're in the point where they've let contracts to buy equipment and actually implement that. We had actually invested in some of the capabilities that they have in there, but not to the level of robustness, if you will, that CDM has. So we've been working with DHS to actually figure out, okay, where do we actually get the equipment? What do we need to bring that on board? And then probably delay the implementation a bit, only because there's a bunch of initiatives that we've got going on that we have to really complete in order to make sure that our infrastructure is to the standard that CDM requires. We're dedicating a lot of resources to remediating long-term infrastructure issues just to keep the lights on, but we're really looking forward to taking advantage of some of the CDM capabilities out there.
So from CDM's perspective, when you talk about some of the equipment, for instance, I know you may not want to get into specifics, but you bought the version 1 and now CDM's offering version 2. Is that a basic difference?
So CDM has I'm not sure how they originally defined it when they defined some capabilities in 2013, but yeah, to some extent, the equipment that they offer on their equipment list now are of varying versions to what we have. So we had a lot of those things. We bought some, I think, very good equipment, so they made a pretty good effort to actually provide some cybersecurity in the organization, but our tools are slightly different versions, and the issue becomes, in the overall CDM picture, there's reporting that goes up to their overall dashboards, and unless you have the right versions, it won't necessarily plug into that reporting. So right now, we're focusing on getting the gear. We've bought some of this gear that will actually start dropping off or need technical refresh in the next couple of years, and that will actually phase in pretty well for the actual implementation piece of the CDM gear.
In the meantime, obviously, you talked about the PIV cards, the HSPD-12 implementation. Were you surprised, because your background is DOD, I think the Navy, if I remember that correctly, is that
That's
right?
That's correct, sir. Yes,
so
sir.
The DOD, the Navy had CAC cards, common access cards, so when you got to SBA, were you surprised that they weren't using that two-factor authentication?
Yeah, it was, and I watched in the when I was in Navy, and they started. Of course, that directive had been out for a number of years, and of course, Navy started probably back in the 2007 timeframe. So it took them a long time. It's culture change. It's making sure that all technology is aligned. So we had been working on that a long time. I made the assumption, some naivete there, that you know all agencies were doing that. So when I got here, I mean, literally, we were at 0%. I mean, nobody was using their PIV card to log on. It was so. It was an eye-opener.
And obviously now you're at 100%, big change. What did you, from a CIO's perspective, have to do to make that happen? I mean, it's nice when you have the hammer of OMB, but you also have to have some kind of carrot as well.
Yeah, so it's interesting. In this organization, the great thing was that the front office, our executive management and the administrator, Maria Contreras Suite, they were all on board with, let's get this done. And so there was a great thing is you had executive buy-in there. Then the challenge with any organization that was trying to do this is, number one, culture change. If people haven't operated that way, to get them to operate that way was difficult. And then additionally, we had some legacy technical issues that we had to overcome. We overcame a lot of those, but we still have some of those. So the good thing was that the executive leadership helped us greatly with all the different program managers and the people that manage the folks that are actually using the equipment. So as we started implementing this and putting these policies out, we had a great deal of organizational backing to make sure that that was the behavior that was going to be expected, that people were expected to use their PIV cards to log on. And of course, as the system enforced that technically, they obviously didn't have any choice. So it wasn't exactly smooth. I mean, we did have some technical challenges, and there was a couple of paths that we were going down that we had to roll some things back and then re-implement them. But we were completely 100%. We were engaging in a bunch of different monitoring and some technical controls that ultimately came down to one universal set of technical controls that we finally rolled out earlier this year. And so everybody's 100%. But, you know, now that it's the way – it was like that way with DOD. Once it was required, then that's how everyone enacted their everyday life. But it took a little while to get here.
And now that it's there, are you seeing, just when you look at your cybersecurity logs, when you look at the way that SBA's network systems data are being protected, do you see a major difference? Like, can you quantify it?
Our big thing, and if you go back to some of the things that they discovered in the OPM breach, is that our biggest concern was our elevated privilege users. Our normal users don't have too much in the way of access, if you will, but so they can access into our network. And so if somebody was going to sit there and use that particular tool, they would get the same access a normal user would be. Now, we don't want somebody in here who's not who they say they are, but our bigger thing was actually getting our elevated privilege users to be in a position where somebody couldn't piggyback off of those and then come in and actually start wreaking mayhem on our network. So I don't think that we necessarily saw any change per se in the activity of our normal users, but the cyber sprint did give us an opportunity to really clamp down on the number of people that had elevated privileges on our system. We did that, and now, of course, it's a much more rigorous process for them to go in and actually be able to make changes in the system. So from that end, the great thing is that now we have better configuration management because we're really controlling the pool of people who can make those changes in the system.
People talk about cyber hygiene. That's half the battle, knowing who's in the system and who's making changes and
making
sure they're not making the wrong changes.
Exactly.
Keith, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we can talk more cyber, more of your priorities. My guest is Keith Bluestein, acting SBA CIO. I'm your host, Jason Miller.
You're listening to Ask the CIO, sponsored by Oracle and DLT Solutions on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. You are listening to Ask the CIO, sponsored by Oracle and DLT Solutions. Once again, here's your host, Jason Miller.
My guest is Keith Bluestein, the Small Business Administration's acting CIO. I'm your host, Jason Miller. Now, Keith, before break, we're talking a lot about cyber, HSPD-12, PIV cards, and the big difference it's made. Cybersecurity also came up in a recent Inspector General Management Challenges report. It was one of several challenges that the IG highlighted and one of several challenges that probably fall onto your office to help work with. So let's start there with cyber and then move on to some of the other ones. What are you doing to help improve cybersecurity and implement some of those IG recommendations?
When you look at the what the IG addressed, they had several broad challenges that in some cases or in most cases actually relate back to senior leadership stability. We've been very fortunate in the CIO, and we've got a chief digital officer here now. We have almost daily conversations with our deputy administrator, and so we have a point on the horizon of where we're shooting for. He's very engaged and ensure we're driving the agency to where we will be able to realize the potential that Maria Contreras-Sweet saw when she arrived. So with that said, there were some specific challenges issues in there. And as I came in, I came from a pretty secure area of DOD, so I was familiar with security constructs, et cetera. And so one of the things that we did as soon as I came on board here is some of those IG findings have been outstanding for a number of years. Some of them were policy and process items that needed to be addressed. And if you don't have somebody that's kind of driving that for a long period of time, certainly driving it for more than 12 months at a time, some of those things can kind of fall off the plate. So, and I think that was what I found was a lot of the things that were lacking or that the IG identified, they were areas that we really just needed to take a pretty good focus on. So with that said, there were certainly things where we did not have a very robust patch and application management process in place, which we've certainly taken a focus on. And just the actual process of how we audit our systems and monitor our systems was not as robust as it probably ought to have been. So we've certainly focused on that. And what that's resulted in is actually bringing significant numbers down, for instance, the remediation items that we needed, not just the paperwork items, but also application-specific things where we had counts in the hundreds of thousands and we're down literally in the single digits worth of thousands and some of the outstanding issues that we might have.
Anytime you get an IG report like that and there's Congress that gets involved, I know that they've paid a lot of attention to these management challenges, that helps to drive home the changes. I mean, is this also, as when you went back to HSPD-12, for instance, part of the culture change that you just needed to have someone on it, have someone focused, and then drive that culture change as well as the process change?
Yeah, there's a couple of different things that we focused on. And I will say, we did have some very good people that were very focused on security to the extent that, you know, we are the Small Business Administration, and we are not dealing with top secret information or something like you might be found in some of these other organizations. We're dealing with some sensitive information, like bank loan information and small business information. But the bottom line is we're out there, we're reaching out with Main Street America, the small businesses of the country, and we have to be able to exchange data and have systems that actually communicate with them. And part of the challenge we had previously is that we had some folks in here that had a very, what I call the Fort Knox mentality, where everything is locked down and the first response to most things is we're going to say no and then we'll go from there. Whereas we've taken a different focus on that is we've taken a very risk-based approach to a lot of these things, like, okay, here are the requirements. Here's what the IG has found previously. Here's what the business wants to do. How do we satisfy all of those things and deliver the service to our regional administrators, our district directors that are out there that are actually interfacing with these small businesses? So it has been a culture change. There's been some turnover of some people. We're in the process right now, in the finalized process of recruiting a chief information security officer that is aligned with that focus. So I think that we've made some pretty tremendous improvements in there, and certainly from the business end of things, that has moved a lot more smoothly. Instead of people trying to bypass the process, people are engaging with us in the process.
The other piece of this, I think that's it's important, is are you meeting with your IG? Do you have, you know, weekly, monthly, daily meetings with the IG so they know that you are moving in the right direction?
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting process. We're a smaller agency, so we, I would say, are more intimate with some of the workings of some of those things that go on than, say, for instance, someone that's like a VA or a Department of Defense. So with that said, our IG is kind of omnipresent in our organization here, if for no other reason that they're integrally involved with the annual audit process that we go through. So they're intimately engaged with them. We see them in for basically 9 months out of the year, they're intimately involved and they're doing daily operations with us in here. So, and the IG team is actually I will say that they have a very collegial relationship with us. I think in a lot of times that can be kind of an adversarial relationship, but in our particular case, they know what the history is. They know what things we've started to get done, and they've seen that there's leadership focus on a lot of these things. So they've worked with us on a lot of these. The unfortunate thing is on some of these things, they have a finding, you have to sit there and remediate the finding, and here's what I've done. And then unfortunately, in some things, it's like, okay, we cannot really sign this off until we actually come back a year later and see that it has actually been implemented and fully exercised for a year. So we are working on that. And, you know, more so than a numbers game for us, we're really focused on, are we actually making our fabric more secure here and put ourselves in a better posture? And certainly we're getting there. I think that the IG and certainly our auditors that are here right now are seeing that as well.
All right. Very good news. Now, along with cyber, there's several other management challenges, some of the loan programs and such that needed updated IT, refreshed IT. Talk a little bit about other management challenges that your office is working on, obviously outside of cyber?
Well, you mentioned specifically some of the loan programs. There's some really great initiatives that have gone on in the organization. For instance, in our capital access area, they've had a lot of, first of all, they've updated a lot of their tools. They actually moved some of their loan-making programs out of our data center, which was here in our headquarters building. They've actually moved that into a hosted data center that is much more reliable, and they've actually shifted some of their services to much more web-based services. And I think that that's really helped. They're basically matching up customers with loans. We've got other initiatives that are out there, specifically in our government contracting and business development. Those folks have been developing a cloud-based application that'll sit there and help small businesses, women-owned small businesses, et cetera, to actually qualify, go through a qualification process a lot faster using a cloud-based tool. So there's a lot of work that's being done in that area to innovate agency and actually make us more responsive to what Main Street America needs or the small businesses needs.
And from your perspective as the CIO, are you also involved in the decision-making and the, if you will, oversight of some of those programs and projects? Because if it's not meeting the security standards or if it's not meeting the architecture standards, that could cause a whole different set of problems. So where's your role fit in as CIO?
What's interesting is, again, a lot of this stuff was kind of set up, if you will, before I got here. Now, security-wise, I'll tell you, especially in our loan programs, that's a pretty robust security construct. So our folks, our IT security folks, work hand-in-hand with their folks. And, of course, they interface directly with most of the nation's banks. So we can't interface and have a direct interface with their systems unless we actually meet their rigorous standards. And in fact, in a couple of particular cases, we've actually rejected, if you will, connections with external banks because they didn't meet our standards. So I think that we actually have a pretty good relationship, certainly on the security side. And then as far as where they're going, that is something that they've demonstrated that they are exceptional in managing that themselves. I'm not going to get involved in anything. I don't need to get involved. I think that's probably part of the problem. Maybe SBA might have had in the past where they had CIOs that, you know, felt that they needed to own everything. And certainly you're responsible for that overall IT governance, if you will. But if the banking and loan officials know how to run that operation better, I just need to make sure that my IT security concerns are taken care of. And if they have applications or other things that they need to do, that, you know, they go through the process just like everybody else to make sure that that's the wisest investment of the taxpayer dollar.
That's actually really refreshing to hear in many ways, that you're involved, but only to a certain extent. You're saying, I'm not have to own everything. I don't have to have my finger in every single pot, but at least understand what's in the pots and understand what's cooking. So I think in many ways, that's you're right. That is much different, not just from SBA, I think, than from a lot of agencies. So it'll be interesting to see how things kind of play out there. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we can jump into some other priorities. I know you gave us a little bit of a heads up in there. My guest is Keith Bluestein, the Acting Chief Information Officer at SBA. I'm your host, Jason Miller.
You're listening to Ask the CIO, sponsored by Oracle and DLT Solutions on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. You are listening to Ask the CIO, sponsored by Oracle and DLT Solutions. Once again, here's your host, Jason Miller.
My guest is Keith Bluestein, the Acting Chief Information Officer at the Small Business Administration. Now, Keith, before break, we talked a lot about cybersecurity and some management challenges. Let's talk about some other priorities. You mentioned the cloud. You mentioned some other pilots. What are you hoping to get done over the next 6 or 9 months?
I guess before we go down there, I'd really kind of like to start what we've done in the last 12 months that sets the stage for what we can do in the next 6 to 12 months. So in the last year, we've been working to solidify our entire agency's national infrastructure that underpins our enterprise. So the agency committed to modernizing as quickly as possible. The administrator, when she came in, and the senior leadership recognized that some things had been neglected for a period of time. So they put their money where their mouth is, and they led the procurement of all new routers and switches across the entire U.S., which is a pretty significant undertaking. So the project's about 60% complete, should be done by year's end. And we knew we had the significant legacy issues with the local data center here. And so we've been very focused on moving as much of that stuff that we have here, stuff is a general term, to a cloud environment. And we've been trying to do that as quickly as possible. So our email was the first target. We've done a lot of work on that. In fact, we're going live with Office 365. We're just opening up the email portion of that capability, and that's going to enable the other capabilities in the coming months. So concurrent with that, we've also been consolidating our SharePoint instances. When I came in here, we had SharePoint 2007, several instances. licenses, SharePoint 2010 and SharePoint 2013. So we're migrating all of the Microsoft Office to the cloud to coexist with the Office 365 instance, and we're going from basically 2007, shifting everything to 2010, taking all the 2010 instances and going to 2013 so that we can shift that into the cloud as well. So since I've been here, the focus has been pretty clear in that, you know, the answer to everything should be first, what can we do in the cloud? So by going to the cloud, that eliminates a lot of the underlying infrastructure that I'd either have to update that or do something to remediate the legacy in here. So by going to the cloud, I actually eliminate the need to do a lot of that. So separately, as we were rolling to the cloud in our email, we had to coordinate an entirely new suite of mobility services. So we deployed close to 800 iPhones and 200 BlackBerry devices. So that required standing up an entirely new mobile device management solution, which is MaaS 360, to a cloud capability, as well as upgrading our BlackBerry Enterprise server to the modern version. So that required coordination, very close coordination with Office 365. And there were a lot of technical and logistical challenges related to that. But this weekend, everything is shifting over. So when SBA comes to work on Tuesday morning, their new phones, their iPhones and BlackBerries will be on cloud-based email, as well as all of anyone who's coming to a desktop here. So finally, one of the things we wanted to do is we wanted to improve our remote or telework capability. So basically, we have people all throughout the United States in addition to headquarters. We wanted to make sure that they had the ability to operate untethered to an office or a desktop, especially for those individuals that are dealing with the small businesses out across the United States. So what we did was we basically bought a third of the agency new laptops this year. Our goal is over the next 2 years to sit there and replace all of the desktops with laptops. And as I mentioned, coupled with the mobility, the phones in there, most of those services are going to be in a modern environment that hopefully enables a much better digital outreach to basically enable the promise of smart, bold, and accessible that our administrator has been set out there clearly as our goal.
All right, so a ton going on there. I mean, you guys have been doing a very busy year, as you said. So yep. Let me back up. Let me start with the infrastructure piece. You said you're about 60% complete with updating routers, switches across the U.S., but at the same time, you're also moving to the cloud. So is the update for the routers and switches kind of a precursor to moving to the cloud, or are they kind of parallel? Well, you always will need some part of your network, but if you can have the updated technologies, and moving to the cloud in other instances is easier.
Part of the issue is there are certain things, if you will, we had the burning platform, the proverbial burning platform when I got here. There had been a data center meltdown prior to my arrival last year, which kind of highlighted the fact that, holy cow, we've got some stuff that's pretty old up. Our youngest switch in our network was actually dying July of last year. It was going end of life at that particular time. So clearly we needed to update the transport out there. And even though we are driving a lot of things to the cloud, not everything is going to be in the cloud. So people still need to kind of reach back to the network. And the other thing that what we did when we bought the equipment for the infrastructure refresh, fortunately, our leadership was forward-thinking. We approached them and said, look, we really want to buy some overhead in here because we ultimately want to give services such as unified communications, desktop VPC, provide people to operate in a modern environment. We're only going to be able to do that if we can pipe lots of data across our network in the United States. So they agreed to that. They bought the equipment that will actually handle all that. And right now, if you sit there and look at the offerings that the Microsoft Office suite provides, they keep rolling in additional capabilities in there, one of which is what used to be Link is now Skype for Business. So enabling over their network, if you're connected to their cloud instance, you can sit there and connect peer-to-peer with people to do desktop video teleconference. The administrator, if she wants, she can broadcast a one-way broadcast to all the users. So we're kind of moving into the 21st century here in some of the technology because of what they actually invested in. And we are about 60% complete. So we've got just short of 100 offices across the United States that we have to deploy to. So we're at about the point where we've deployed, I think, 60 to 65 of them. It's been a pretty remarkable effort. And the thing is, as you well know, when you move to the cloud, you still have to have connectivity to get there. You have to have that bandwidth to actually get there to enjoy the experience of the cloud, because now your compute is up in the cloud as opposed to on your desktop. So the advantages of having that robust infrastructure out there is that you won't have a degraded customer experience as they're actually using using this new cloud environment.
And I think that's sometimes what people forget. They move to the cloud and they forget this other piece of it, which is their own infrastructure. If it can't, if it will integrate with the cloud very well, you do. You get the delays and the latencies that will affect, for instance, as you mentioned, Skype for Business or VTC. The other piece that related to this is the move to Office 365. You seem very calm considering that, you know, this weekend is a very, very big weekend. Talk a little bit. Are you guys, you feel pretty comfortable then, I guess, in terms of data will get moved, or is it just the service themselves? Talk a little bit what this.
This is one of these things. I did a base realignment and closure move several years ago when I was part of the Navy, and most CIOs, and I had heard this several times, said once you do a BRAC or a consolidation move, you'll only do one because you'll always leave before someone has to do another one. And there's a lot of truth to that. So I view this as almost the same kind of exercise. We have been working through this and planning through this since, well, almost since I got here. I mean, really started taking a very strong focus on this back in the August timeframe of last year. There have been a lot of planning, and just like remodeling an old home, as we started to prepare to move some of these things, we discovered infrastructure issues and other things that we had to remediate in order to make sure we could move seamlessly to the cloud. So it's not that we're calm. It's that we've been kind of going through, kind of like we got trapped in a cave and you had to find your way out on the other side, and you're going to do whatever you have to do to get there. So we know now we're at the end of that tunnel. We can see the light at the end, and what's going to happen is going to happen. We don't have any choice. We can't stay where we are. So this weekend, that switch is going to turn, and we all know that come Tuesday morning, we have some dedicated professionals that are doing an awful lot of work this entire weekend. And coming Tuesday morning, we're going to have customer people kind of going throughout our entire agency here. We know that the people out in the field may have some issues in there. We have to anticipate some, despite our best planning, some issues going to occur out there, but it is what it is. So at this point, it's one of those things. It's kind of like I've gone up, I'm in a parachute. I have no choice. I'm going to have to jump out of that plane. So at this point, there's no reason to worry about it. And it's not that I'm not concerned about that. We certainly are, but we're at the point, we've been going through this long enough that now it's to the point, it's like, okay, let's get this done. We really, our organization really wants to get this done kind of turn the corner on the legacy of, hey, maybe IT can't deliver what they promise. I think that this is going to be the opportunity to show them that, look, we did accurately plan. We did all the things we said we would do, and we did them when we said we were going to do them.
It's a great attitude in many ways, because it is very stressful. And I know talking to other CIOs where they can, you know, spend the week and weekend and plans just to, well, I got to be, you know, here just in case. Once it is done, it's cloud email to start, and then it's a suite of also other collaboration services that are coming behind it. What other benefits are coming, or what other tools are coming, if you will, 6-9 months from now?
If you're familiar with the Microsoft Office suite, we're just doing email now, but one of the things that comes along with that is a pretty amazing collaboration capability. They have this thing called OneDrive that's part of that. So basically, it's a shared drive that everybody has, and it comes with, I think it's originally provisioned at 1 terabyte or slightly more than 1 terabyte. So everybody has a lot of space on there, and then when you collaborate, you know, right now, most people, when they want to sit there and collaborate on a document, they take the document, they attach it, and they send it to 86 people that might be on the email distribution. Now you can sit there and just send a link, and everybody can access that one document, which saves you bandwidth, improves performance, and they have a lot of storage. In a lot of cases, one of the issues we'd always had is we never had enough storage in the agency. So when somebody needed something, we were constantly trying to figure out how we're going to reprovision more storage for these individuals. We didn't do a very good job of actually managing our storage area network. So that gives you that capability. Then following that, we actually plan to just roll out the entire suite. So to give them all the tools that are actually serviced out of the cloud, like Microsoft Word, PowerPoint, Excel, those things. And the one thing about the mail that's fantastic is when you manage your mail on-premise, you know, at this point, part of our policy is that we limit people to a 500-megabyte mail size. So we're constantly going through this process where users have to migrate stuff off and archive it in order to make sure that mail doesn't shut off in their system. Well, when you go to the cloud, they're getting 50-gigabyte mailboxes. And I realize that can encourage some pack ratting, if you will, you know, just kind of store stuff like a pack rat. But it's going to alleviate that from a – so from from a user standpoint, there's going to be a much better experience in there. So we mentioned the mail going to the share drive, having the tools that are out there. And then there's a host of other things that come along with that. Like I mentioned, Skype for Business. So we had already been using Link, which is kind of like an IM or a chat tool. We use that pretty regularly in the organization. But when you look at the offering that Microsoft has for Skype for Business, there's video teleconference capability. There's a lot of other collaboration capability that's built into that, which is really a platform for unified communications. In fact, I'm not trying to make a pitch for Microsoft here, but they claim that they're now a telecom company, and that if you have their Office 365 solution or you're in the Microsoft cloud, you can basically get everything. I think short of a toaster is what they offer through their offerings there. So they offer telecom service. So at some point, and I don't know that we'll go down that path, but one of the things that we were focusing on when I first got here is we've got to get rid of our telephone infrastructure, because we have a variety of different instances, some very old legacy systems that are in some of these remote offices in our loan processing center. We want to get something that's one homogenous and a uniform construct out there. So certainly the cloud opportunity provides that as well. And then last piece in all this is that when it is in the cloud, one of the things that we'll be doing, since we've got 100% PIV usage now, is actually enabling that access in the cloud, so that now if somebody goes home and they want to remote, or they're traveling somewhere and they want to actually operate remotely and do their activities in the cloud, as long as they can authenticate themselves through a virtual private network connection in there, they'll be able to operate anywhere, regardless if they have a government laptop or not.
Keith, tons of stuff going on. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we can finish up, talk a couple other priorities. My guest is Keith Bluestein, the Acting Chief Information Officer at the Small Business Administration. I'm your host, Jason Miller.
You're listening to Ask the CIO, sponsored by Oracle and DLT Solutions on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. You are listening to Ask the CIO, sponsored by Oracle and DLT Solutions. Once again, here's your host, Jason Miller.
My guest is Keith Bluestein, the Acting Small Business Administration's Chief Information Officer. Now, Keith, before break, we were talking a lot about your priorities. We spent time on cyber, then we spent time on cloud. All of this comes back around to the fact that under the Federal IT Acquisition Reform Act, FITARA, you're supposed to play a much, much bigger role in not just overseeing the technology, but really overseeing the planning and the budgeting and things of that nature. Talk a little bit about FITARA and talk a little bit about how you guys are implementing the IT reform law.
When you sit there and go through FITARA, I think it probably hit every agency a little bit differently in there, but we had some of the same issues that everyone had across government, so certainly SBA was not immune to that. I know that in the past for SBA, some things were probably problematic when it came to insight into the acquisition process or even involvement in the decision-making in that acquisition process, but since I got here, and I know that you indicated that you'd been with the one of the most recent things that I'd done with our Chief Financial Officer, Tammy Perriello, I've found a very close friend, and we've developed a very close relationship on how we actually execute our duties, because she is actually in a position where she's the Chief Acquisition Officer as well as the Chief Financial Officer. So we pretty much communicate on goals, and then that drives our procurement strategy. So we've been very closely aligned since I got here on that. Now, some of that may have been because FITARA was going to drive it that way anyway, but FITARA just gave us the opportunity to actually codify those in our implementation plan. So it just codified some of the things that we were already actually doing. So working with their organization, the CFO's organization, we've been very proactive in identifying anything that smells like IT, so that when it comes through on the front end of the procurement process, they immediately alert me if there's not an indication that we've been involved. Now, separately, what we're trying to do is actually get that involvement earlier on in the process, and she's helping us force that. So some of that is setting up a process, and whether it's a series of review boards or just a review process where people feel that they can be engaged, they can come up with an innovative idea, suggest it through our architectural review board or some type of process to say, this is a good idea, let's move forward. And so that's what we've been developing as a function of FITARA. So I think that all of those things certainly fold together to help implement FITARA. But as I said, one of the things that maybe the purpose of FITARA to some extent was to make sure that you had that bond between the Chief Financial Officer and the Chief Information Officer to make sure that you were getting the best investment for whatever resource dollar, taxpayer dollar that you were investing. And certainly I think that we were going down that path before we had the legal implementation requirement on that.
Now, it's interesting with FITARA, you talk about a lot of agencies approach it differently. you guys at SBA, you didn't have a bunch of bureaus with a bunch of different CIOs. There's always
exactly.
There was always one CIO at SBA, or when there wasn't one. What, from your perspective, when you go to the mission office and talk about IT, how do you ensure that there's not, if you will, shadow IT, if there's not IT hiding, if you will, underneath the covers of a program saying, no, this is an IT, this is a loan system, or this is a government contracting system, but it's not IT. How are you ensuring that that doesn't happen?
Yeah, so you bring up an interesting challenge, and it's not really unlike what we were dealing with IT security. I don't need to own all these things, and I do not profess to be a banking IT expert. So there are people here that some people have been doing this for the better part of 30 or 40 years. So they're very, very expert in those particular areas. So all I've tried to do is, okay, let me try to determine, what kind of investment structure you have, what kinds of tools you have. And really where I am at this point in time is that, again, if you're an expert and you're in that area, I don't need to run that for you. I'd just like to know what you're doing and understand if you have certain things that you need to do that I have commonality either in another area or possibly across the enterprise, let's sit there and see if we can actually do something together to provide everybody that particular capability at a much better price or deliver it at much more seamlessly. So as we've reached out, and one of the things I did when I got here was I went and started talking to all the different program managers about what they're doing, what their pain points were, etc. I found that, people are much more willing to share and say, look, if you can be a partner in this, we would like you to be a partner in this. And so that approach to things has certainly open doors where people come and they float ideas past me or past our CFO early on in the process, where we can sit there and actually kind of get an idea. Is that something that we want to do? And just that kind of collegial approach, if you will, has brought more people back into the fold here, where I'm not going to say that there's not shadow IT. There are places where, we need to get this done and through whatever process they've bought some IT. But I think we're seeing a pretty significant reduction in that, because people realize that, it makes much more sense if somebody can sit there and pay for this as a corporate bill and I don't have to figure out how to come out of my own personal budget to sit there and pay for this IT. They're much more willing to do that. And what they found is that there's an environment where I'm not looking to take over their particular area. I just want to know what you're doing, and let's go about approaching that and procuring it in the most smart way, if you will, for investment of taxpayer dollars.
And I think part of the goal is to see that reduction in shadow IT, see that move to commonality, to shared services. So if it's happening, you're right, you don't need to own it, but you just, as you said, need to know what's going on.
Exactly.
And actually, this is a good segue to my next question around innovation. You mentioned earlier on, SBA has a chief digital officer, if you will, not a CDO, chief data officer, but a different type of CDO. Talk about your relationship with that person, and then also talk a little bit about how you guys are promoting innovation together throughout the agency.
Yeah, I said we had problems just running basic IT infrastructure when I first got here. Shortly after our former CIO left, they brought in the chief digital officer. They basically put him in the office beside mine. So it's one of those things like if I brought two puppies and I put them together, they're going to have to learn how to get along with one another. And it's not that that's been a contentious relationship, but I think that people recognize that, look, if the chief digital officer is going to be successful, he has to be completely married with the IT in here. So it's kind of an interesting approach that in order to have a chief digital officer, I think that's fully effective, we've talked about getting data in order and getting the underlying infrastructure. That has to be there in order to drive that digital capability where they can now actually deliver these services, whether it's to handheld devices or provide web-based or cloud-based services that help the small businesses out there. So we've been working very, very closely to make sure that the infrastructure builds that we're putting together and the technology that we're putting in the cloud here is actually going to support that particular effort. So our chief digital officer is Tracy Terrell. He's brought in several individuals that he worked with previously. They're working very, very closely with U.S. Digital Services. So and they've got a number of projects that they've got in the works. But at the end of the day, this is all about the vision that the administrator had. Mary Contreras Sweet, came in here, I want smart, bold, accessible. I want SBA to sit there and be on the forefront of everybody on Main Street America, the small businesses. And the only way to truly realize that, we are out there with people, but now make that where it's accessible 24/7 on handheld and any other manner when people are thinking about how do I go about getting access to capital or how do I go about doing certain certain things, getting assistance for small businesses. He's working hand-in-hand with me to realize that.
All right, Keith, unfortunately, we're out of time. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us today. My guest was Keith Bluestein, the Acting Small Business Administration Chief Information Officer. Keith, thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you for listening to Ask the CIO, sponsored by Oracle and DLT Solutions. The entire show is available on demand on federalnewsradio.com. Search Ask the CIO.